I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barber shop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape up this week are freelance writer Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and NPR's political editor Ken Rudin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, how we doing? Welcome to the shop.
Jimmy, hey, how you doing?
Good, man. Good.
I'm making it do what it do, man. Check this out. The Senate Finance Committee approved the health care overhaul bill by a vote of 14-9. Clutch the pearls. I can't believe it. These are heady times we're living in. But it could only muster the support of one lone Republican. Again, color me shocked.
True. But you know, it was exciting here. Well, this is what we think is exciting in Washington, right? And now the president is on the road. He went to New Orleans yesterday and gave a very spirited defense of the process. Here it is.
We get this stuff done. We keep on going until we get it done. I don't quit. You know, let me tell you. Those folks who are trying to stand in the way of progress, they're all, let me tell you, I'm just getting started. I don't quit. I'm not tired. I'm just getting started.
Wow.
Yeah.
Barack Obama down there in the home of the No Limit Soldier.
That Hillary Clinton impression. I'm not tired. I'm not tired.
Ruben, what do you think of all this?
Well, listen, about the health care bill, yes, it's true that you had one lone Republican, Olympia Snowe, support this from Maine. But beyond that, don't forget, Max Baucus is a conservative Democrat. The main problem that Obama has always had on health care reform is with his own party, conservative Democrats. Republicans are in the minority in the House and Senate. They shouldn't even factor into this. If you have 100% allegiance in your own party, you don't need Republicans for anything. I think the good thing about the Baucus bill is that it's passable. It'll get through, I think. And the president can sign it and call it a day and call it reform. The bad thing is it doesn't do things that it should do, like control costs. It doesn't go after that hot button. It doesn't have – I think this is a good thing. I'm about to say he doesn't have a public option. That's one of the reasons the liberals don't like it. I'm concerned that a public option would do a lot of damage to our private insurance companies. But the bottom line is it's about what you can get by. And the idea of a public option, while important to the president, I think is not going to be so important that he will veto this bill. I think he will sign this bill. Public option or not, and it's going to drive folks on the far left batty.
Ruben's concerned about damage to the private insurance companies. That's really very charming of him, I think.
I know.
But
it makes me all miss.
Like 80% of Americans, I like my private insurance company the way it is.
Well, a lot of them don't. But can I just ask Ken this? Because we had Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey on the program just a few minutes ago. He's on the Senate Finance Committee. He insisted that he thinks there will be a public option in the end. Can I just get your perception of this?
What I'm fascinated by, and I think Ruben touched on this, is that we think that the Democrats are in control of Congress, but it seemed like Olympia Snowe was in control of the Senate, at least the majority leader this week, because there's been wooing of her and, you know, kissing her ring for months now just to get her on board. Look,
and not just her ring either.
Exactly. Well, careful. Look, if we didn't have her vote, it would have been 13-10 instead of 14-9. It would have passed either way. But Barack Obama wants to say the word bipartisanship. He wants to be a bipartisan bill. The point is, as Ruben pointed out also, is that it's not the Democrats are not united behind this. You know, you could stand up at Dr. Martin Luther King Charter School in New Orleans, as President Obama did on Thursday, and say, we're going to, you know, those people who are stopping progress, we're going to get them. But a lot of those people who may be blocking this bill may be his fellow Democrats.
But this is the part I don't understand. This is something that Ruben has written about several times. Why is it more important to get that one Republican vote on the Senate Finance Committee or three on the Senate floor than it is to address huge members of the Democratic caucus, both in the Senate and the House, who really do believe in a public option?
That's what drives Democrats nuts, because the conciliator, he's been the community organizer, always wanting every voice. Look at him on Afghanistan. Should we pull out troops? No. Should we add troops? No. I'm looking for middle ground. He wanted the same thing with a Republican vote. The problem here and the irony here is that Olympia Snowe has promised her vote just for the Senate Finance Committee bill. There's no guarantee she'll vote for it on the Senate floor.
So.
Right, exactly.
Yep. If she said, you mess with this bill and you add to the deficit and you drive up costs or you put in a public option and I'm out.
Arsalan, what do you think?
I think, you know, piggybacking off things that both Ken and Ruben mentioned, you know, it mathematically meant nothing. And Olympia Snowe is a symbolic vote. I think that, you know, they are able to say that this will be a bipartisan bill and, you know, slightly disagree with Rubin. I think that at the end of the day, Democrats will fall in line in terms of actual whip counts on the House and Senate floors in terms of vote count.
Before we move on from this topic, it says, Jimmy, you are a freelancer. And like a lot of freelancers, you buy your insurance on the open market. How do you feel about this?
You know, I'd like to see a public option, but we'll just have to see what can go through. You know, I mean, it's like the good senior senator said, you know what, she jumped in. Her support is not guaranteed down the road, right? But she jumped in because she said she called it a risk worth taking at this point. And you know what? I can dig it.
You want a public option because you think government does everything well. I have images of people
I
on
don't.
The
no, I
rooftops.
Don't, actually.
I have images of people on the rooftops in New Orleans after Katrina saying, help us, help us. And Dick Cheney never showed up.
Listen, the United States Postal Service is our public postal service. I don't hear FedEx or UPS or, you know, complaining about the fact that there is a public option for sending mail out there.
All right. Moving on to New Jersey politics, incumbent Governor John Corzine is being criticized for highlighting the fact that his Republican opponent, Chris Christie, well, the dude's a little big-boned, you know.
as we say in the community, he's big-boned.
Well, you know, I mean,
well, I'm going to just play the ad. I just want to warn you that hearing it doesn't really convey the full picture. So there are some unflattering shots of Chris Christie getting out of a truck. But listen for the line here where he says he's throwing his weight around. Here it is.
If you drove the wrong way down a one-way street, causing an accident and putting the victim in a trauma center, would you get away without a ticket? Chris Christie did. If you were caught speeding in an unregistered car, would you get away without points? Chris Christie did. In both cases, Christie threw his weight around as U.S. attorney and got off easy.
Hey!
You know, you're really right about that, Michelle. If you don't see the video, it just sounds like he's making another point.
Yeah, because the expression itself is a perfectly legitimate one.
Yeah,
if you're talking about somebody who thinks they're above the rules, which is wait a second.
But this could very easily
talking about a fat guy. Excuse me. This could healthy big bone guy.
This could very easily backfire on Corzine because you know what? According to the New Jersey Department of Health and Senior Services, 56% of New Jersey residents are overweight and 20% are obese. So Christie might get the fat vote.
Well, look, first of all, we know that last week President Obama won the Nobel Prize and we know that Corzine gets the Nobelly Prize because obviously Christie has the belly. But to watch that commercial, to watch Christie, the body jiggle as he gets out of the car. There's no question that's exactly what he's doing.
Oh,
and this is what a governor does when he has an abysmal record to run on. He was a Goldman Sachs executive who took millions and millions of dollars from Wall Street.
No!
Well, he says, which should have been mine. But
and I mean, it was just awful. And basically, the way to run in New Jersey, and New Jersey politics is historically known for this, is you just run a negative campaign.
It's weightism.
It is weightism.
Which, you know, is interesting because when he was confronted about this by a reporter, he said, are you calling him fat? He said, well, am I bald?
Yeah, well, and
yeah, that's not nice.
I've actually sat next to John Corzine on an airplane, and he is as bald as a cue ball, and I'm going to give him the Come On Man Award of the week because seriously, come on.
Not the redunculus? Not quite.
It's more of a come on, man. It's like, seriously?
Oh,
it's like,
no, but Chris Christie's on the new NPR show, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yeah,
it's very he's
here all week.
He's here all week.
The waitress.
Absolutely. Yep. But seriously.
Do you think it crosses the line?
It does cross the line. Again, it gets into, you know, personal ad hominem attacks and, you know, it's like, today you can attack somebody on their weight. Well, tomorrow, why can't you attack somebody on their color?
I wonder in this case. That's why it's an interesting thing to look at and see what the effect will be at the end of the day. But if you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're having our weekly visit to the barber shop with Jimmy Israel, Arsalan Iftikhar, Ruben Navarrete, and Ken Rudin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Speaking of people getting roughed up, let's talk about some football. The group that was bidding for ownership of the NFL's St. Louis Rams franchise has dumped conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh, saying he comes with too much baggage. Who'd have thunk that?
I know. I'm shocked by this. This comes, of course, after several NFL players, African-American NFL players, spoke out about the possibility of Limbaugh taking on ownership of the Rams or an ownership interest in the Rams, saying that they would never play for the franchise if the talk show host was one of the owners. And Jim Irsay, who owns the Colts, said he would not vote to approve a group with Limbaugh. And I think a lot of people may forget that the other owners have to vote to let you in, which is really interesting. It's kind of like a co-op, you know. You have to be voted into the group.
You're absolutely right.
A-train.
Well, you're absolutely right, Michelle. And as someone who has lived for 7 out of my 32 years in St. Louis and have actually been to the games and seen the greatest show on turf, I have two words for Rush Limbaugh. Boo-hoo. Seriously. The NFL Owners Club.
I see the tears dribbling down
your cheeks. Well, the NFL Owners Club is a country club. And if country clubs can keep out people of color, they can certainly keep out Rush Limbaugh. I mean, this is it's like if Don Imus tried to buy the Rutgers women's basketball team, we'd be like, hell no. You know, it's just, it's one of those things. It's just like, you know, you have your bully pulpit. That's fine. You make your millions. You have your millions of followers. But you're just not welcome in this country club.
Wait, A-Train. Hold on. Hold on, bro.
What about if it was women? I mean, I think people no longer think it's acceptable for country clubs to keep out people of color, but they do still keep women out.
Right.
It's based on his views and his public. That's a tricky question.
It is a tricky question. Do you count anybody out because of how they feel about anything political or social? I mean, can anybody name a great, you know, uniter who owns a team? I mean, give me a break. To your point, A-Train, I mean, it's like, you know, you're thinking that Rush Limbaugh might affect how people of color are hired in the back offices of these teams and all that kind of stuff. Maybe. Right. But it's not as if he's marred shot.
Donovan McNabb, right. Dog. Donovan McNabb.
Right. I'll explain to people what you're talking about.
It doesn't go back to Donovan McNabb's thing. It doesn't. Well, no, it's not about that.
Let him explain what he's talking about.
It is partially about that, Ruben. I mean, you know, when Rush Limbaugh said that Donovan McNabb is a good quarterback because he's black, when, you know, he has...
Not what he said.
What did he say?
No, what he said is that he's overpraised because he's black. This was ESPN's Sunday NFL Countdown, by the way, is where those remarks were made. Here it is.
I'm sorry to say this. I don't think he's been that good from the get-go. I think what we've had here is a little social concern in the NFL. I think the media has been very desirous that a black quarterback do well. Mm-hmm. We're interested in black coaches and black quarterbacks doing well. I think there was a little hope invested in McNabb, and he got a lot of credit for the performance of this team that he really didn't deserve.
Where did that come from? I mean, exactly. Where did that come from? Doesn't every team have hope invested in their quarterback? Excuse me. What?
A little hateration in this dancery.
This is outrageous for three reasons. One of them is something that was alluded to earlier and that Arsalan alluded to as well. This notion about, like, the country club, the fact that you have this mostly white male club of people that are taking it upon themselves to obscure the fact that there are not enough minority owner stakes in professional football. There's not enough black coaches and Hispanic coaches in professional football. The other thing is, as someone who offends people on hourly basis, okay, and is constantly being berated by right, left, and center, and people call my boss any given day to say, fire that guy, fire that guy, I have to object to censorship. And this is an idea somehow that people, as Michelle mentioned, are being punished for their views.
Censorship is the government intervening in political speech and allowing people to decide what political messages are being made. There is no evidence that Rush Limbaugh has been censored in any way. Don't these players have a right to say who they want to play for and who they don't? Don't you as an employee have a right to say, I don't want to work for that organization if this was a person who owns it? So what about their rights?
Well, people who disagree with something I write in the morning paper have a right to disagree with it and be offended by it. They probably don't have a right to call up and try to pressure my boss to fire me.
Ruben.
And so I'm going to have that view.
Sure they do.
I'm going to be much more sympathetic.
But they have
to
a right to not buy your
trouble.
Paper, don't they?
Wait, Ruben.
Ruben,
like I mentioned, if Don Imus wanted to buy a WNBA team, do you think that he should be allowed to?
That would be up to the, as you said, the same thing here. It'd be up to the owners of that group to decide whether or not they want to let him in. But if that happened, I would call them on it. I'd say, exactly, how many of you are African Americans? How many of you have diversified your offices? And I understand
Ruben,
the head coach.
Ken Rudin wants to weigh in.
Ruben, but isn't there a difference between...
I just want them to walk it like they talk it.
But isn't there a difference between having to be a white owner and saying incendiary remarks? I mean, we talk about, you know, George Preston Marshall, who kept blacks out of the Washington Redskins for years. George Weiss was the general manager of the New York Yankees. No blacks, no Jew. I mean, he was an anti-Semitic racist for years. Now, to say that, do we want something like that to show that we believe in non-censorship? I mean, that makes no sense to me.
I don't think that he's like that. I don't think that Limbaugh is anti-Semitic. I don't think he's racist.
He has said incendiary comments. He has said many incendiary comments that in this day and age are not acceptable. Look,
so have I. I mean, so I'm not.
You don't think there's a difference
either
between your work and Limbaugh's? You don't think you could gratuitously offend?
Careful, bro.
Maybe. I mean, do you?
Well,
I mean, you don't see any difference.
$400 million, and I don't. I mean, he's got a Gulfstream, and I don't. So, like, obviously, there's some difference in the way that he's approaching his job and the way that I'm approaching mine. But
I guess I'm still interested in why it is that you feel these players don't have a right to be heard on the people who would own their team. Are they not stakeholders? The league is 60% African American.
Those African American players are, in fact, they're being bankrolled and supported by a mostly white audience. My main point here is, as someone who makes a living offending people And sometimes when people are offended, they try to pressure you in a power play to get you fired or get you suspended or get you whatever. And it's happened to me more times than not. I cannot look at this any other way but then to have great alarm at this sense that somehow you're being punished not for anything you've done on a football field, but for the views that you express in a whole different medium. And by the way, if you don't have a black president, if Hillary Clinton were president, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So much of what Limbaugh is doing comes off as, quote, racist because he's criticizing a black president.
It's a country club. You know, the NFL won't just give a team to anybody with $500 million. You have to apply and you have to get in, and didn't get in.
And another issue, when is Washington going to get a professional football team?
Oh, true. Ouch.
Ouch. That legacy of all those years with no black players is finally catching up. Well, for point of record, the Washington team was the last team in the league to desegregate. They were 8 years after the previous last team had desegregated, and they only desegregated through the pressure of the Kennedy administration because they wanted to build their stadium on land owned by the Department of the Interior.
1962. Nice.
So there you go.
Interesting.
All right, fellas. That looks like that's going to be a wrap. I want to thank you so much for coming out to do the shop. I have to pass the ball, per usual, to the lady of the house, Michelle Martin.
Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist who writes for TheRoot.com. He's also a presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University in Cleveland, Ohio, and he joined us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the San Diego Union-Tribune and CNN.com, and he joined us from San Diego. Arsalan Iftikhar is the founder of TheMuslimGuy.com and a civil rights attorney, and he, along with Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor, our political junkie, we're both here in our Washington, D.C. studios. Gentlemen, thank you.
Peace.
Thank you, Yankees.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Brecken Booker, Monica Evstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Irva Gunja, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, Jennifer Longmire-Wright, and Jack Zahora. Our interns are Monica Anderson and Hope Lehman. Our planning editor is Luis Clemens. Our senior editors are Peter Breslow and Alicia Montgomery. The program is directed by Rob Sachs. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. She had a hand this week from Neil Tebalt and Stacey Abbott. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more on Monday.